Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. We continue our College Contender Series, breaking down our top 11 men's teams heading into this 2021 Division I ITA season. Of course, it's crazy to think we've already covered four squads: Georgia, Michigan, Stanford, and Florida. If you missed any of that content, you can find it all on our website, crackedrackets.com. Of course, with these podcasts, you also have our Cracked Interview show, where Chris Halioris and I interview these college coaches. You also have Matt Stachowiak going in even further depth, breaking down each of these teams in article form on our website, crackedrackets.com. So if you have missed any of our conversations on the first four schools, be sure to check out all of our content, catch up on all of it over there. But of course, we carry on today's show up to school number seven, and joining me to break down that school, as they always do, the two other members of our College Tennis Holy Trinity here at Cracked Rackets. Let's start with the man we love the most, your favorite writer on our website, the former four-star recruit on tennisrecruiting.net, of course, Nick Stachowiak's better half. It's Matt the Crack Stachowiak. Matty, hey, Great Shot. Happy belated Thanksgiving. How was your holiday?
It was good, man. It was good. I'm feeling pretty well. A little bit sluggish after all of the food that went down last week, but you know, I'm always going to bring the juice, man. I'm ready to talk about some Texas A&M tennis. It's going to be fun, so ready to do it.
Matty, you strike me as the sort of guy who goes for the 10 p.m. Thanksgiving sandwich and then, of course, just loads up on the cranberry sauce, some, you know, mashed potatoes, maybe even a little Brussels sprout action on that 2 p.m. sandwich the next day as well.
Yeah, that's a fair statement, Gruskin, minus the cranberry sauce. I will have none of that.
It's controversial.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know a lot of people love that stuff, but, you know, give me everything else, you know, but I'll do without the cranberry sauce.
You know, I think this is a generational thing because I agree with you. Not a fan of cranberry sauce. Cranberries are the fruit of the 1960s. And so, speaking of the fruit of the 1960s, the third member of our College Tennis Holy Trinity, you know him as the forefather of the College Tennis Ranks formula. Predictions never far from the listed UTR. One of the many dames to root for the Liberty Flames. Lover of Almond Joys. And, of course, the snitch, the professor, Chris Halioris. Chris, hey, Great Shot. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. I feel like you shower in cranberry sauce.
You know, it's funny because we have not talked about this at all off air. And I have one rule for Thanksgiving, and that is anywhere I go, I bring two cans of jellied cranberries. None of the cranberries with the nuts in it or no crunchiness. I want sheer, right out of the can, cut, slice it with the knife on the edges to get it to suck right out, and I'm eating the entire can myself. It's just pure sugar. I mean,
that makes sense. I mean, look, you've got a runner's body, so you got to refuel, get those sugars in however you can. It makes a lot of sense. And obviously, I know how you like to spend your Thanksgivings, particularly these past 5-6 years. You were on the ground doing some reporting, we'll call it, with the former Mississippi State crew. You enjoyed yourself?
Oh, yeah. We had a blast. Typical, you know, all kinds of competitions this year. It was go-karting, axe throwing, soccer, football. We had a blast. It was first year we didn't host here in Kentucky. We actually all went to Florida. So, got a little nice warm weather and drove back into the snow last night. So, you know, I'm not too thrilled about that, but we're back.
No, I feel like the beanie you are currently wearing is messing with your Skype green screen background, and it's kind of funny, but it emphasizes the fact that, yeah, it really is, the weather is turning, and perhaps that more than anything else signals we are inching closer and closer to the return of the college tennis season. As I mentioned, we're already four schools down. I was starting to get things because, you know, we try to work ahead sometimes here at Cracked Rackets, and I was like, all right, let me text these next two coaches, and I was like, oh my God, they're the coaches for schools number 6 and number 5. 5 on our rankings. I can't believe we're already approaching the top 5, but of course, one of the quintessential features of this 2021 season is how, you know, deep all of the rankings are this season because of the depth returning on each and every one of these teams, and it feels like all of these schools we've talked about could spend some time in the top 5 if things break right for them. But I really do think we are starting to maybe even jump into a next tier with our conversation today. And before we introduce today's school, before we get into our conversation, as always, Westhoff, give me that college contender sound effect, please. All right, Maddie, I'd like to have you plug the article here, which, of course, all of our listeners should go and read on our website, crackrackets.com. You started the outlook of this Texas A&M team, who comes in at number 7 on our Cracked Rackets preseason rankings, and it does feel, you know, you mentioned this at the top, and this is something I feel like where we have to start our conversation. This A&M team had momentum on its side in 2020. Where, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, no question, man. I mean, they were rolling at the end of the season. They were riding a 7-match winning streak as things got cut off. So they were feeling good about themselves. Obviously, they suffered a few losses, all indoors, by the way. You know, Texas A&M is again, another one of these teams that we think of more primarily as an outdoor squad. And once we got past that indoor portion of the season, you know, they didn't lose again. 4-0 in the SEC with big wins over Florida, which really put them in the driver's seat, I think, to win the conference. If things had kept going, A&M had that inside track to win the conference. Very, very good record at home. 8-0, I believe, record that A&M had in College Station. So they're always tough there. And yeah, they were rolling. I mean, very experienced group. They're all coming back this year. The few losses that they had were, you know, not even to me, they weren't even that bad. I mean, you lose to Ohio State indoors on the road in Columbus. Okay, big whoop. Everybody loses at Ohio State. So, you know, I'm okay with that, right? Then they go to indoors, play a Michigan team, which I know, Gruskin, you and Chris remember this match very, very well. You guys were there up in Wisconsin, and Michigan shocked a lot of people because A&M, you know, on paper, I think most people thought that they were going to be the better team and win that match. But obviously, Michigan indoors had the edge, and they snuck out that 4-3 match. And I know you remember Andre Styler coming through in the clutch at number 2 singles. So that was a big-time win for Michigan. A&M suffers another loss there. And then again, later on in the tournament, a 4-0 loss to TCU, which out of all three of their losses, that one may have been the most head-scratching. But TCU was feeling themselves as well. They were also very hot as we ended the season. So from my perspective, they were having a very good year. SEC wins over Kentucky, Vandy, South Carolina, and that big one against Florida at home. You know, it would have been fun to watch them continue.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the pleasures, again, of getting to do this College Contenders preview series, and it's not just clickety-clack, although I highly recommend all of you go listen to the interviews Chris and I do with these head coaches, but, you know, we have been, I guess chasing is the word to use here, Steve Denton for a long time. And for those of you who don't know, Steve Denton was a top 15 ATP singles and doubles player, an All-American in the late 70s at the University of Texas, a Grand Slam champion in doubles as well, number 2 in the world, I believe, was his career high. And that's before his coaching career. And obviously, he has been the leader of some really outstanding Texas A&M teams of late. And that was something Chris and I wanted to talk about with him. And when talking about this program and looking at this team, because the center of this team, and we'll talk about roster projections, we'll do all of that later on. But just basically, or just at the basic level, fundamentally, where this team, this culture is built from, is their returning trio at the top of the lineup in Val Vacherò, Hattie Habib, and Juan Carlos Aguilar. And the thing I wanted to ask Coach Denton about with this team, particularly because this is a streak now that, in my opinion, dates back to the first time we all met each other. We love referencing this NCAA tournament, 2018 NCAAs. That Texas A&M team, if you go back and look at that roster, I mean, it's out of this world. They had, you know, Patrick Kipson playing at number 1, Kipson fresh off of a Kalamazoo title run that he had that season, and obviously was one of the top players in the country. You have Arthur Rinderknecht, who's now a top 150 in the player in the world, playing at two singles. You had Jordi Arcanada, who's obviously gone on to have a pretty successful top 500 career thus far, at three singles. And then you had Vacherot and Aguilar at four and five, Smith at six, and, you know, Hadi Habib's not even there in that lineup yet. And so obviously he has established himself these past two seasons. That's the thing I love most about this team, Chris. And we saw it a little bit with that USC team last year, and obviously North Carolina, that, but a little bit even, you know, more pronounced perhaps. Experience matters. Talented experience matters. Top end talent matters. It's just, you go for checking off all of the boxes you want for a team coming into a season. And in a normal year, like if UNC didn't bring back their entire roster, this team has the makeup of a national championship team. You can't tell me there's that big of a difference. You know, were Ito and Siskar that much better at the top of Texas's lineup when they won an NCAA championship? Was Texas that much deeper than this A&M team? My answer to those, both of those questions, would be no. And I'm really excited about this Texas A&M team. Curious what you think.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you bring back the three guys like they've got at the top that have been there for years, and, you know, they were already one of the top threes out there, and you bring them all back, it's a great recipe. And I think it's much the same for them in terms of outlook, where they know what they're getting out of the top three. They're going to have, just as they did last year, Shachter and Barnaby Smith, probably in some order, at 4-5. Although Barnaby Smith had some injuries last year and had some issues trying to get fight his way back in the lineup. But I would still expect that's your 4-5. And then it's back to the same old question that they've had for the past couple of years, and that is, who's six? Is it Guido Marsone? Is it, you know, one of the newer guys, being Pierce Rollins or Stefan Storch, or the guy that I actually think could jump in and surprise, just because none of the other guys is standing out, and that's Bjorn Thompson, who they got as a grad transfer from Texas Tech. He will absolutely be in the doubles lineup. Question is, can he make the singles lineup? But that's a guy that's got, you know, 4 years of playing experience under him and has played well. Maybe that's the experience they need in that sixth spot, instead of rotating guys that are just, you know, not getting a lot of it and maybe don't have the nerves to hold up.
You look for this Texas A&M team, what they did last season. You know, they were pretty solid in doubles, 6-3, or maybe a little bit better than that at the number one position. Pretty good at two doubles. That combination of Shachter and Vacherot. Shachter seems to continually be in puberty. Gets taller and taller every season. Him and Vacherot, that's just a lot of height, a lot of length. They had success. At one point, they were 8-1. 7-4 at the number three position. Tried out a couple of teams there. But all of the pieces are there now, and I agree with you. And we talked to Coach Denton, and when you asked him about Barnaby Smith, Chris, he got so excited. He was like, thank you for bringing up Barnaby. Like, yes, Barnaby Smith, excuse me. When you brought up Bjorn Thompson, he was like, thank you for bringing up Bjorn. Not that he wasn't excited about you, Barnaby. If you're listening to this, go listen to the podcast. He had plenty of glowing things to say about you, but he was like, we absolutely know what it means to. And I believe Bjorn Thompson, I don't know if he was an NCAA finalist in doubles, but I think he got up to number one in the country, right? Am I crazy here?
He and Parker Wynn were. Yeah.
Yeah, they were really a phenomenal team. And so you throw him in with a guy like an Aguilar, maybe you can split up now Aguilar and Smith, or you just have one more option. And they always seem to be looking for that sixth guy to fill out the back half of their roster. They found that in doubles. Now, Chris sort of mentioned some of them, Manny, but when you look at this team in terms of the singles lineup, we know, you know, five of the guys. We know it's going to be Smith, Shachter, and then the top three of Vacherot, Habib, and Aguilar in some order. What do you see when you look at the bottom in that fighting for that sixth position?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, a guy like Marsone, you would think maybe would have a bit of an edge. I mean, he was there last year. He's been in the system. He played at six. You know, I think he may start out there. But again, the experience of a guy like Thompson is so important. And always at the lower part of the lineup, you would much rather go with an experienced player than some, you know, talented younger guy, especially in that lower portion of the lineup. So I would not be shocked to see Thompson down there. But I also think that Coach Denton is probably going to mix it up a little bit. I think early in the season, he's going to say, all right, guys, who's going to step up and take this position? Like you mentioned, Gruskin, the top five, I think, is pretty much set. We can all agree on that. But there's a lot of options at number six. I mean, there are a lot of good choices, and that's a good problem to have. The question is, who's going to step up and take it? My best guess would probably be Guido Marsone or Bjorn Thompson.
So, Chris, I see you shaking your head. I want to let you answer here, but you are the lover of UTR, so some numbers for you. Texas A&M, they're power six, and I'm going to throw Marsone in there because he's a slight edge over Pierce Rollins, and then there's a little healthier of a gap between those guys and Stork and Thompson and Apparat. But you look at them against some of the matchups they'll face in the SEC. I even went all the way to South Carolina, and in that South Carolina match, in that instance, Marsone would be a favorite, but against Tennessee, Tennessee's Mark Wallner, who by UTR is at the number six position right now, he would be a slight favorite over Guido Marsone. You move on to the next team against Georgia, Grevilleas would be a slight a slight underdog, but of course we know that is still subject to change. That's, you know, a toss up essentially. In the Florida match, slight underdog for Marsone against Goodyear, and Florida, by the way, the team in the SEC with the highest UTR right now, Texas A&M slightly above Georgia. But, you know, as you start to compare, you know, nationally against some of these other teams, you know, TCU is a slight favorite at the number six position, and then you start to get higher up the rankings. You look against a team like USC, who brings back similar veterans, USC would still be a favorite at the number six position. UNC would be a favorite at the number six position. So who's the guy you see at six? And then looking elsewhere in their lineup, their depth compared to other teams' depth, you know, you start breaking down the match calculus. What do you like most about this A&M lineup, Chris? Because to get back to the momentum, sorry, I know I'm saying a lot here. I missed you guys. This is what I did at my dinner table, and my parents were like, what are you doing? Like, well, my mom was like, oh, I love that. I'll listen to that on the pod next week. My dad was like, stop it. He and my brothers just tuned me out. Well, little brother, sort of interested. He's like, college tennis, I'll stick around for the first 2 minutes, but you lost me when you got to Stefan Stork. But anyways, you look at this team and it's just, I mean, the match calculus is momentum-wise, they miss the indoors in 2019. They make the indoors in 2020. That's a victory. Obviously, they beat Florida to end last season. It looked like they had the inside straight to the regular season SEC title. Just what do you think about this A&M team, Chris?
Well, so I'll go back to first my shaking my head in you know, a rare disagreement with Maddie, in that I just haven't, in the last 2 years, there have been a couple occasions when Marsone has gotten, gotten the big win they needed. But he, you look back through his results, and he's basically probably beating the guys he ought to beat and not beating the guys that are above him. I don't see the big upside. The guy that I see the upside in is Pierce Rollins. And I think it kind of depends, you know, maybe it's even a week by week decision on, hey, do we take the steadier, because you're going to get a little more up and down probably out of Rollins, and maybe a steadier Marsone. And again, Bjorn Thompson could come into play there. But, you know, Rollins has had some great matches. He went three sets with Govind Nanda, right? He beat the number two from Mississippi State. He's had some really good matches over the past, you know, since last season, if you will. And shown, he beat Byler from Oklahoma like 2-2. I mean, he's had some good wins. I think there's plenty of upside there. And I think that's the guy that might start there. I don't know. But again, when you've got options of Marsone, Rollins, Stork, and then Thompson coming in, you know, it's really going to be probably one more for the coaches where they'll be kicking themselves for, we played the wrong guy or we played the right guy. It's going to be that kind of thing. So you just find the guy in the form, and maybe it's a matchup type deal where they go in each week with who's the better matchup for the teams we're playing, or who, you know, do we need to go a little riskier? Do we go safer? What's the best thing to do? And I think that's the way they'll play it. But yeah, from a team outlook, I mean, they're probably going to be the favorite in every SEC match pending the location of the Florida match. And then I say you make the home team the favorite, whoever it is, outside of that. And that might be the case with Georgia as well. But yeah, these with the guys they have at the top of that lineup, they're just going to be the favorite. And adding, I think you can't understate the importance of adding Bjorn Thompson into that doubles mix, because that's an area where they really needed to get stronger and get more lock points going into singles. And that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, just look at some of the numbers for them over the past few seasons during this. You know, we'll say this is the fourth year of the run, Maddie. You know, the big positions that stood out to me, number three singles over these past couple of years. In 2018, Jordi Arcanada goes 21-3, but overall they're 23-6 at the position. In 2019, they go 25-3 at the position, most of that behind a 17-3 Val Vacheron. In 2020, you know, to that point, they were a combined 11-0, and that comes from Habib, Aguilar, Vacheron, and then Shakhtar not losing a match at that position through their first 13 dual matches. I mean, we know they're going to win one of the top three, and one could argue their number three singles position. You can look elsewhere in the country, you know, Rinki Hijikata, if you're going to count him out, he wants a word with you. Whoever plays number three singles for Baylor, like if Charlie Broom or a guy by the name of Nick Stachowiak even are playing three singles for Baylor, like that's ridiculous. There are some ridiculous three singles out there. Whomever it is, Aguilar, Vacheron, Habib, will be the most, if not right up there in that same conversation for most ridiculous three singles. But, you know, some of the other numbers, doubles, as Chris mentioned, they've been fine. They haven't been bad. They haven't been good. They've just been fine. They beat who they're supposed to beat. They lose who they're supposed to lose to. I don't know. When you look at the match calculus, they're going to be bad teams because of how good they are at top, but in terms of how they match up with the other top schools, what are the match calculuses you like for them? What do you think are going to be their pathways to victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think against almost every single team, minus maybe the top elite squads, I think they're going to win two out of the top three. I really do. I mean, when you look at Vacheron at number one, I mean, this is a top player in the country. You know, Habib, who I think will play number two, can be pretty much anybody in the country at number two. So he's got a chance. And then obviously you mentioned number three, which will pretty much be a lock almost every single match. So I think if they win two out of those top three, then you look at four and five, you know, probably Noah Shakhtar and Barney Smith. And you say, okay, if one of these guys wins, just one of them, we're at 3 points here. Now, the improvement in doubles with Bjorn Thompson, I think that helps a lot. If this A&M team can start to win doubles points routinely, then it's over. I mean, then it's over because they're going to split singles. They're going to win three singles matches. The question is, if they need four, if they lose the doubles point, you get two out of the top three, Shakhtar or Smith wins at four and five, and if it comes down to that number six, that's where it could be just a little bit nervous for A&M fans. And again, I think there's got to be a guy that steps up into that position. I know Chris really likes Pierce Rollins. I think that'd be a great option. I just think he's going to have to earn it. I don't think Coach Denton is just going to give Pierce Rollins, you know, the number six spot and say, hey, man, here you go. This is yours. I think he's going to have to show it by beating people in early dual matches. And then if he does, then yeah, that could be his spot. But I think Marson, I think Bjorn Thompson, all of those guys are going to have something to say about it. So for me, the calculus is, hey, you win doubles, the improvement with Bjorn Thompson gives you that added guy. And then you win two out of your top three singles and get Shakhtar or Smith at four and five. There you go. That's going to win almost every match.
And I think that's the sort of tier we're in. You put it perfectly. The sort of tier we're in is we see 3 points for you. I agree with you. And 90% of matches, Texas A&M should win two out of three in the top three. They should also get one of Smith or Shakhtar. And you look over the past 2 years, in 2019, Barnaby Smith goes 15-5 at the number four singles position. Shakhtar 10-9 at the number five singles position, but he's a freshman. He's a much different player since then. You look last year, it was Shakhtar who went 6-3, but 7-3 overall in duels at the 4-5 position. Smith goes 5-1, 4-1 at the number five singles position. So I agree with you. I see 3 points. I do see it. The question is, what are they getting from their doubles teams? You know, what are those configurations going to look like? And then again, compared to other SEC teams, Chris, you look across the conference, and even if you want to compare it beyond the conference to some of the other top teams nationally, it's the same question, I know, but how do you like this A&M roster compared to a Florida or a Georgia?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like it. I think I'm going to swap the top two from what Maddie said, and I think in my mind now, I would almost cut – you can play it any way you want. In my mind, it's a mini stack if you play Val 1 and Hadi 2. Hadi is a clear number one on this team to me. He's beaten both Val and Aguilar here in the early year. He's had – you know, Val's actually taken some really poor losses in the fall. And then he's withdrawn a bunch from his late tournaments here. But, I mean, he lost to, I think two of the three matches when they played the round robin deal with Mississippi State. I'm not sure, but I want to say it was two of the three that he lost there. Yeah, he did. He lost to Dade and Memo both. And then went 3-6-4 in the third with Flo. Hadi's just a lot more solid. And when I watch those guys, I'm watching, I don't want to play Hadi. That he's just unbelievable. I don't know how he doesn't win more than he wins. So that's the guy I'm scared to play. I don't want to play him at all. So I would play him one. I'd play Val two. Aguilar, I mean, it doesn't, like you said, they're going to be almost a lock at three no matter who they put there. But I still like playing Aguilar at three. I still think, just like Maddie said, two out of three, I'll take two out of three out of that top three against every single SEC team. I'll say they get two out of three. I think if the other schools like Florida and Georgia are going to beat them, I don't think it's going to be by taking two of the top three. I think it's going to be by beating them in doubles, letting them have two of those top three, but then, you know, taking one of those plus doubles, that gives you two, and then taking two of the bottom three in four through six. And that may not be easy, but I think it's easier than taking two of the top three. So that's where the battle lines will be drawn. And, you know, and every one of these schools that we're talking about, whether it's Georgia, whether it's Florida, whether it's A&M, we have a question, you know, as you always do preseason, nobody ever goes, yeah, our top six are a deadlock. You got a question of who's playing that sixth spot for every one of them. And that, you know, that's going to be the very crucial spot when it comes down to these matches, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Maddie mentioned this at the top. 12-3 Texas A&M last year. Those three losses are to three teams we are going to talk about during this series. We already talked about Michigan. A little bit of a spoiler alert. TCU's coming up next week. And then, you know, the team after that is the team coming after TCU in Ohio State. And those are all indoor losses. Those are all, you know, Chris, we're going to talk about it with Roditi when we have him on the show. I think one of our fondest moments of the National Indoors was that final consolation match where Roditi comes and knocks on our shoulders. And you know, this is back in the day, by the way, pre-COVID, when you could touch someone on the shoulder. And he just kind of goes like, are you guys watching this? He's like, are you seeing what Famba's doing to Aguilar? And we were both like, I know, man. And we were like, this is ridiculous. And you just kind of – I think that's my concern for this Texas A&M team is I don't think they're going to lose a single match to anyone they shouldn't lose to. Meaning if you are a Tennessee, a South Carolina, a Kentucky, you know, any of those really good but not top 15 top tier NCAA teams, you're not beating Texas A&M. They're too good at top. They're going to be too good at doubles, and they're going to have solid depth from one to six. I do think, though, like, and we talked about it when we did these pods, if everything breaks right for Georgia, if everything breaks right for Florida, I just like the talent they have four through six. Well, not four through six, but I just think all of those guys can, you know, we've seen the best, not that we've seen the best, but we know what Vashro, Aguilar, and Habib all look like when they're playing their best. We just don't know what those other teams look like when they are playing their best, and that unknown is what's so intriguing to me, I suppose. And that's why, like, again, I don't think Texas A&M gets upset once this season. I think they could lose to Georgia, they could lose to Florida, depending on where those matches are. What do you think, Maddie?
I disagree. I don't think so. I mean, I really like this A&M team. I think they're the favorite, and they're going to be – well, we'll get into it in just a little bit. But look, Noah Schachter, remember, guys, probably going to play the number four position. That's where I'd stick him anyway. He clinched that match over Florida last year, beating Andy Andrade in a tight match. That was big time, okay? This guy's on the rise. Noah Schachter's improving.
And he's still four.
Exactly. That's my point. So let's take this into consideration. You play Barnaby Smith below him at number five. Look up his dual match record, guys. Barney Smith is experienced. He's been around. Gruskin alluded to it earlier. He played on that 2018 team when we were all there, right? We saw Barney playing in the lower part of that lineup. So he's been around. He's played in big matches. I think that is a tremendous guy to have playing your number five position. I mean, the question may be at six, but to me, with the addition of a guy like Bjorn Thompson in doubles, which is what they needed, that was an underrated signing that people aren't going to realize until they actually start watching the dual matches. The improvement in doubles, this lineup, for me, I don't think they're going to lose to Florida or Georgia. If everybody stays healthy and is playing well, I'll take A&M in those matches, regardless of venue.
I feel like I've been all over the place in all of these previews, and the only one where it's going to be simple for me is North Carolina, where it's just like, oh, remember when they beat them 4-0? Remember when they beat them 4-0? Remember when they beat them 4-0? And yes, Brett Macy, I hear you. I remember when USC beat them as well. But that's just one where it's just like, what is there to talk about? Will's really good. Ben's really good. Rinky's really good. Brian's really good. I just, like, I said it at the top. Under a normal circumstance, under the normal conditions of a season, I would love this team. But there are just so many other teams. Like, the compilation of talent, there are more number one singles players on Baylor's roster than maybe anywhere else in the country, right? You've got La, you've got Soto, you've got Broom, you've got Stachowiak. They've all done it at the number one singles position, and they're all on that roster. I love Noah Schachter. I absolutely agree with you. I think that's someone they both need and will see another big jump from this season. But like, you look at the preseason poll. So again, I'm going to rat you guys all out here, but we always say this. I had them, you know, or I should say, Maddie, you were consistent. You've been high on them all along. You had them number six in your preseason poll. Chris had them a little bit lower at number nine. I split the difference and had them at number eight. The thing I think is worth mentioning is I feel like we all feel pretty similarly about the teams ranked 6 through 9. Like, it's, and ha ha ha, good joke there, Alex. Hey, great shot. But it's just like all of these teams are pretty similar. All of them are fairly even. So I guess, Chris, you have them number 9. What is it about this team? Because I believe you have, and I'm going to look this up as I'm talking, but I believe you have, in terms of your rankings list, it went, you have both Florida, or you have Florida a little bit higher than them. You have Georgia right behind them at number 10. Why do you have A&M where you have them?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to say because they did beat
splitting hairs
Florida last year, right?
Yep. I mean, bringing everybody
so
back.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I feel like that the Florida I feel a little more confident in the Florida depth than I do the A&M depth right now. I think the depth is going to come into play should we actually get a full season in, for various reasons, you know, that of things that are going on. And I like the depth they've got, and that's, it was very, very tight. I mean, those teams could go either way. I'll say I clearly do think it was, even though it's those three at the top of the SEC, the toss-up to me really was, is it Florida over A&M or A&M over Florida? And I was going to make Georgia the third team there. But yeah, I gave that slight edge to Florida, and I won't say for a second that's like barely over 50%. It's not, you know, not a huge confidence thing there where I say, oh, there's no doubt that Florida is better. No, those two teams, I think they played 10 times, they each win 5.
Yeah, given this Great Shot podcast is sponsored by our friends at DraftKings, dkng.co/crackedopen, this would be one of those minus 125, minus 105 matches, right, Chris? Where it's like, you're not going to get underdog odds on either of those teams because they're both very likely to win. And I completely agree with you, but I also think you framed it perfectly there. And I will say, I had Texas A&M 8, I had Florida 9, Georgia 11. Just to recap for you, Matty, you had A&M 6, Florida 9, Georgia 10. I did give A&M that boost. They beat Florida in the last match. They deserve credit for that. But to your point, when there's that inevitable injury, and I'm not wishing that upon any team, and that's what I said, 1 through 5, I love this A&M team. But if they lose one of those five, it's much more significant, in my opinion, than if some of these teams above them lose one of their top five guys because of just how deep their rosters are. So I think that's a really good point, Chris. Matty, I see you shaking your head. You agree?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I'm obviously basing my rankings and my predictions off of a fully healthy team. I mean, I'm not going to wish injuries upon people and say this guy's going to be out and all of that. So I'm not really looking at it from that same perspective. But yeah, sure. I mean, if guys get hurt, I think there's a lot of teams that would be screwed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. Yes, we are. Anti-injury on this podcast. We're pro-health, but it is just acknowledging the reality of the depth, and that is the one thing some of the other teams in the top 10 have that perhaps this team does not. But with that in mind, let's talk a little bit of predictions for the year, because I also want to talk about a little bit of news at the end. You look at this team, you know, Matty, you and I have them ranked number one at the SEC, in the SEC. Let's start there. Do you expect them to win the regular season title?
I sure do. I think they were going to win it last year. I think they're going to win it this year. I haven't seen anything that would change my mind. I mean, Florida lost their best player, team captain. A&M brings everybody back and signs Bjorn Thompson, who's a tremendous doubles player, very experienced. I think A&M got a little better. I think Florida got a little worse. So my pick is A&M to win the SEC.
So I was joking around about this before. And first of all, it's so funny to take this at the pivots I have taken over the course of these podcasts. I hope someone writes them down, because earlier today on Twitter, I was arguing against Andy Murray, and I was like, what has this come to? Like, where am I in my life right now, pandemic-wise, that I'm now anti-Andy Murray? But, you know, Bill Simmons, best podcaster in the business, has this theory called the Ewing theory, and it's based off of the 99 Knicks. When they lost Patrick Ewing, they actually got better and ended up going to the NBA championship, and I was the biggest Oliver Crawford fan probably in the country during his 3 years in college. I see both Matt shaking his head, Chris reluctantly sort of raising his eyebrows, which is like, oh, what's Gruskin about to say? Is he a 10% candidate for the Ewing theory? Like a 10% Ewing theory candidate that he just, there's so much energy, so much passion that all of these players are trying to match that at all times. And it gets a little bit stressful and it wears you down a little bit. And I'm not saying I believe it, but I'm not saying I don't believe it. Maddie, I see you shaking your head.
I don't agree with that whatsoever. I mean, you're not going to tell me that addition by subtraction or whatever you want to say there. I think that is bull. I really do. I mean, you're talking about it. Oliver Crawford was one of the best players in college tennis.
I know.
I mean, you love this guy, Gruskin, even more than I did. I don't know what you're talking about here. It makes no sense to me. So, no, I do not agree with the Ewing theory for Florida. I just don't.
Chris? I think, Matty, what I think he meant to say was there is a potential Ewing theory possible there. It just wasn't Oliver Crawford. It was Alfredo. Except Alfredo's still like the volunteer assistant. So he's not
so
really
he's still
gone.
Hanging around.
And why Gruskin was so in love with Oliver Crawford, I never understood. But no, as much as he loved him and as much as I loved Florida, that's the one guy I didn't like. But I think it was because he always won and he let you know he was winning, right? That's a tough loss. No, I don't see how you get better losing that. And unless your 10% theory is based off of not so much that those guys are getting relieved of stress, but maybe it forces a bunch of other guys to pick that level up and become a little more emotional on the court and loud and that leader. And maybe they get a little more of that out of some guys and it brings that out of them, maybe that helps. But no, you there's no way you ever say, yeah, go ahead and leave, Ollie. We're fine. No chance.
Well, yeah, first of all, again, 39 minutes in, I got to spice things up, make sure you both are awake. I agree with you. The real theory in college tennis is the Daigle theory, and it's that when Virginia lost Jordan Daigle and when they lost Harry Richmond and they kind of, you know, narrowed down the roster a little bit and just figured out who their six guys were, and, you know, Aragone being that sixth guy, they went on to three straight national championships. So I think that's probably the theory. Also, the Daigle theory, you don't like the Daigle theory either?
Not
You're
even,
shaking your
not
head?
Not even close, Gruskin, to the same type of a deal. You cannot compare Daigle to Oliver Crawford. Not even close. Not even
Gruskin
close.
Gruskin brings up the one and only guy I ever seen say, fine, the next ball that hits anywhere in the court, I'm calling it out. Ball at the service line, he calls it out.
Well, if I want to get – how mean should I get here? All right, I'm just going to get mean. I don't mean this, but never let the truth get in the way of the good joke. The opposite of the Ewing theory in college tennis is the Ingledson theory. It's like, get him off the roster. Like, he's just been on for too long. Like, it's time for Johannes. No, that was a joke. That was a joke. I'm a Johannes Ingledson fan. How many times do I have to say that quarterfinal day, A&M versus Florida, Mississippi State versus Ohio State? That's the best tennis day of tennis I've ever seen in person, including the national indoors. And so... Again, never let the truth get in the way of a good joke, but that was a lot of mishigas to avoid you having to give a prediction. Chris, your thoughts on this A&M team, where they're going to end up in the conference?
Well, I mean, I got to stick with where I put them preseason, and that was number two. I'm not going to be surprised at all if they win the conference, but I'm still going to take – and I think – we haven't even seen schedules. Like I said, I'll go with the home team in the head-to-head match just because it was at College Station last year. I'm going to – say there's a good chance that match would be at Florida this year, but I thought what Coach Shelton told us, and I don't even remember what he said now, Gruskin, he told us that they were contemplating just repeating
last year's schedule.
Oh, was it last year's?
Yeah, it was last year's, right? And so they'd go back to A&M.
So if they do that, they go back to A&M, and then, yeah, if that happens, then I'd go, okay, I think A&M wins that match, and they probably then win the conference. But yeah, until I see that schedule, that makes a big difference to me. And those courts at A&M are definitely a home court advantage type court. So until I see that, I'll still say I give my edge to Florida. But it's not going to shock me at all if A&M wins the conference.
Yeah, I think that is very, very fair. I think.
What's your pick, Gruskin?
I mean,
here comes Gruskin. I'm going Georgia.
I'm going to take Mississippi State, and here's why. I'm going to take Liberty to win the SEC. I mean, I love Ann Schachter like I love my own mother, so it's very, very difficult for me.
On this show, we have a thing for moms that like us, especially
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And the
didn't come out the way you
of.
Meant it to – Yeah, that's not what he meant by that. To all of you with the dirty minds, get out of there. But yes, we're Ann Schachter supporters here at this podcast. And so to pick against – but the problem is, I mean, if a Florida Gator was like, I'm not going on the podcast anymore, like – Gruskin, like, I would get it because I have not been – it's been a rough 2 weeks for the Gators. At the same time, like, I watched Lucas Greif play at a Cracked Rackets event this summer, and I was like, this guy could be the best six singles player in the country. I don't think I saw him miss a ball I don't think I saw him make an unforced error. And just the depth on that Florida team, it's scary, and they have a ton of options. That being said, give me A&M to – I'm going to split the difference here. A&M to win the regular season, Florida to win the postseason. Possible? I feel like that's the most diplomatic solution here.
Very, very possible. I don't even know the last time the same team won both. It hasn't happened. The last two tournaments Mississippi State's won, they didn't win the conference either year. It was A&M 1 year and Florida the other.
Yeah. So then let me state, I think A&M wins one of the titles. I don't know if it's regular season or tournament. I think it's going to be regular season, but I do think they win one of the SEC titles. And I think they're right there in the national hunt, but I think they're one of those teams. A top 8 seed is crucial. Like, I think they need to be top eight. I think that match has to be at home, particularly when it's the bottom of the lineup that you need to come through for you. Although, again, Schachter, Smith, Jr., fifth year, they're both have plenty of experience under their belts. Maddie, you have them number six. Do you think quarterfinals is the end of the road for them, or do you see them potentially competing further than that?
Yeah, right now I'm going to say that's the end of the road. I've got them in the quarters. I think the potential is there if the guys at the top, right, these seniors, these guys that have been around, the experience can carry them through, and if they get hot, I could potentially maybe seeing them in the Final Four, but things would have to break right, and I'm not going to pick that. I am not picking that. There are four teams that I like to be in that spot better, so I'm not going to pick them there, but I do think they get a top eight seed so that they can host that super regional. That's going to be big, like you mentioned. I think they'll get there and finish top eight, quarterfinals.
It's a shame this team doesn't have an indoor facility, because I feel like if they played a lot of indoors tennis, they could be the team that goes on a run at the national indoors, that makes a run like that UCLA team did in 2018 with their senior experience. Of course, that UCLA team ended up making, I think, the NCAA semifinals, and I feel like under a normal circumstance, that's what this A&M team would be capable of, but it's just not normal circumstances, and I just agree. You look at the top four rosters, and we'll talk about them down the road, but they're 1 through 9. They're not 1 through 6, although they are 1 through 6, but they're also 1 through 9. And it's just like, it doesn't matter. Even if Barbotzer only plays 6 matches for Wake Forest, they're going to be just fine this season. And like, if Val Vacheron only plays 6 matches for Texas A&M, that's a huge problem. And so that's why I just have them a tier below those elite contenders. I also think they're a team that ends up in the quarterfinals. I hope, and we teased Coach Denton about this, and he, of course, was like, oh, I can't. I knew you were going to bring this up. Although it was Chris who brought it up, not me. I hope we get an A&M Michigan rematch. That's something when we do our ITA draft preview. If I'm picking for A&M, I'm going to Michigan just on principle, because of the way that match ended. I'd been like, let's take another shot at them. Like, we want that. That's a match we win. I think this Texas A&M team is going to play a lot of fun matches. They're not going to lose a match 4-0 to anyone. They're too good. They're too experienced. This team will be a tough out no matter what stage of an event it is. I just really like some of the teams at the top of the college tennis world. So I have them at number I have them as quarterfinalists. And again, we have Texas A&M as the number 7 team in our Cracked Rackets preseason poll. Now, with that in mind, we have a little bit of breaking news here on today's podcast. Chris Halioris reporting this news first. I will mention we need to work, Chris, on how you format those breaking news tweets. You know, you always, if you have breaking news, you got to sell that bad boy. Chris, what did you learn today?
Well, we learned that the women's indoors, which was originally scheduled for Seattle, being hosted by the University of Washington, has been moved from Seattle to Oklahoma State, the site of what was supposed to be the NCAAs that never happened last year. So with that, you know, a lot of side effects from that as well, in that Washington no longer the automatic berth. Oklahoma State is the automatic. Washington will have to qualify. And we also hear that the teams that had previously opted out will be given the chance to opt back in prior to the draft now. And unconfirmed, I have heard that there were potentially as many as 3 top 10 teams that had opted out initially on the women's side. And I think primarily just because of the West Coast travel, you know, along with all of the pandemic concerns and all of that, and that probably was a big reason behind moving it to a more centralized location in Oklahoma State, that we may get those, you know, one or more of those teams back in now. But yeah, it's definitely confirmed that indoors has moved back to Oklahoma State. And so now that'll have an impact on the upcoming draft.
Yeah, and look, as someone who I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, I don't want to jinx anything, I'm knocking on every piece of wood in my room right now, but we were supposed to go to Seattle. I, you know, Nordstrom Tennis Center, I've seen it on video, I've seen it on so many ITA pages over my fandom of college tennis. I was very much looking forward to going to it, but you know what else I was looking forward to? Checking out Oklahoma State's brand new tennis facility, and to that entire program to have an NCAA tournament ripped away from you. And Chris, I think it's safe to say we both would have been at that event. We probably would have dragged Maddie along with us. It would have been an absolute blast. And so that program deserves to have an event of this magnitude. I believe they were rewarded with an NCAA tournament down the road as well. Hopefully they'll be able to have that too. But I'm ecstatic to see the brand new facility. Hopefully, as you mentioned, we'll get the chance to be there. But yeah, look, we've talked about it more and more. Hopefully all of these schools will be allowed to play the national indoors, because different governing rules for different schools, different states, you know, California schools in particular, it's going to be more difficult for them to get clearance to sort of either host these events or travel to these events. But it does feel like, Chris, it does feel like, Matt, that as of right now, we have all systems go still.
Yeah, I love the choice, Gruskin. I've been to the Greenwood Tennis Center. That in the indoor facility there, the Ann Greenwood Tennis, is beautiful. It's great for spectators, because you've got it's not one of those indoor facilities where you're maybe split 3 and 3 and you've got to sit between the courts and you can only really see the near courts. You've got the bleachers up over top that stretch down almost the length of the court. You know, you have the two courts on the very edge. You get to the kind of the corner of the bleachers to watch, but it's a great facility for the spectators, with the upstairs balcony that where you get to look over and see the play down below. And you know, even better facility where on the outdoor courts, Michigan took their first loss last year. But you know,
oh, there it is. Westhoff, leave it in. Leave it in.
But no, that is I hope it happens, and if we get to go, that would be great. But it's a wonderful, wonderful facility and a great place to host an event like that.
It's just a more centralized location too, right, guys? I mean, center of the country, more teams are maybe going to have access to the facility and everything to get there. And you know, just with everything going on, I think every team has to be prepared for just everything to be in flux, right? I mean, things are going to be changing. The schedules are going to change and teams are going to opt out, and we don't know where matches will be played and all of this stuff. So, you know, this season, I mean, we just have to be happy to watch some tennis, you know, if we get it. And I think all of these programs have to be prepared to make adjustments on the fly. It's going to be like that all season long.
No, I completely agree with you. Again, very much looking forward, hopefully, to having the chance to be there. But for all of these teams, it's just hopefully we get to see them in action in 2021. And again, it does feel like all teams moving ahead. You talk about fluctuating schedules. We, of course, will be continuing our College Contender Series. We'll try to get back on track in terms of days. I know we've gone a couple of Thursdays now on back-to-back weeks. But rest assured, we still have 6 more teams to go. That means 6 more head coaching interviews. That means 6 more conversations here on the Great Shot Podcast, 6 more articles from Matt the Crack Stachowiak. So be sure to check out all of that content on our website, crackrackets.com, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Of course, what else do we have coming up from a college standpoint? It's ITA kickoff draft time. Normally, we do that at the end of the NCAA tournament in the June range, but we know that draft is actually happening on December 7th. So, of course, we are going to have a little bit of fun, do our own mock draft here at Cracked Rackets. Different format given it's an abbreviated kickoff weekend, but you know, Matt, Chris, and I will put a little bit of studying in. We're going to have some fun with the format, see what we can and can't do via video, but I believe there's going to be a video component to that, so be on the lookout for both that and the corresponding podcast. And then, of course, for all of our off-season content, our next-gen ATP 2.0 series, what our new series with Cameron Mofid that's coming out soon, our Deciding Point series, everything we're up to. You can find it all on the website, crackedrackets.com. You need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at GreatShotPod. Shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Fligter and Daniel Westhoff, who have a of an adding job to do day in, day out. Shout out, of course, as well to our friends at DraftKings. Go to dkng.co/crackedopen to play. Still a couple of challenger events, still a couple of futures events. Tons of former or current college players in action. If you think you know a little bit more about them, you feel comfortable with them over their opponents, there's always hidden value to those college guys going and playing the ITF Pro Circuit. You know what those college guys look like. You know their levels. So be sure, of course, to go check out all the action with our friends at DraftKings. But with that in mind, we'll go to you first, Matt. Any final thoughts on this A&M team?
Yeah, guys. I mean, it's a team that we can't underestimate. I mean, there is a lot of talent on this squad. I mean, they're well coached. And, you know, when you're talking about the SEC, I mean, this is by far one of the best conferences in the country. So for me, they're at the top and they're going to be a contender. There's not a team in the country, whether it's North Carolina, Ohio State, Baylor, Wake, I don't care, that is going to go into a match against A&M and feel like they're just going to roll and you know, they're going to have to put in the work. So I'm looking forward to watching these guys. They were a lot of fun to watch last year, and we'll see if they can win the SEC.
Yeah. Chris, same question to you.
Yeah, no final thoughts really, other than I'm looking forward to seeing them again. There are a couple, you know, Coach Denton and the assistant coach, you know, Kevin O'Shea, they're a couple of my favorite guys that I love to see a lot, as well as their SID. So I'll look forward to seeing those guys. Hopefully we get an indoors. Hopefully they actually pick Michigan, and you and I will go watch that. If they go to Michigan, we have to go see the kickoff weekend, Gruskin. But then hopefully they make it through into indoors, and we have that event in Chicago, and we're all there.
I think from now on to your intro, another new line I have to say, he has no final thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Halioris. But yes, I'll be like, Mom, Chris is staying at the house. And she'll be like, what? And I'll be like, he'll stay in the basement, but he's staying at the house. absolutely. We will be on site for that one and so much more. Again, number 7 on our list, Texas A&M. With that in mind, for my wonderful co-hosts, Matt the Crack Stachowiak and Chris Halioris, our super producers, Max Ligner and Daniel Westhoff, our friends at DraftKings, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Matty, Chris, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey.
Hey. Great shot.
Great shot.
And we will see you all next time. Thanks, everyone.